Hello, this is Betty, and I'm reading from the News Gazette for Friday, October 16th. And as usual, we'll start out about the pandemic. And for Restore Illinois, this is Phase 4, Day 113. And in Illinois, there's 321,620 cases, which is an increase of 4,000. And we have 9,127 deaths, which was an increase of 53 deaths. In Champaign County, there's 5,424 cases, increase of 65 with 28 deaths. In Douglas County, 461 cases, increase of 29 with 9 deaths. Ford County, 230 cases. It's an increase of 4 with 7 deaths. And in Piatt, 185 cases. It was not an increase, and there still is no deaths in Piatt County. In Vermilion, 1,211 cases. An increase of 59 and with 8 deaths. And Illinois impact, there's some blurbs about state tests pandemic high for most new cases. Champaign County woman in her 60s with underlying health conditions and a Vermilion County man in his 70s who'd been hospitalized are the latest local residents to lose their lives to COVID-19. Nearly 7 months after its first stay-at-home order, Illinois on Thursday set a single-day high for new cases, 4,015. And the positivity rate, Illinois, is 4.9%. And our neighboring states, Missouri is at 5.3%. Kentucky is 5.3%. Indiana has a 15.9% positivity rate. Iowa has a 19.6% positivity rate. And Wisconsin has a 21.8% positivity rate. And active cases by Champaign-Urbana zip code, 61820 has 113 cases. 61821 has 35 cases. 61801 Urbana has 34 cases. 61822 in Champaign has 30 cases. And 61802 in Urbana has 24 cases. And all this information was provided by Jeff D'Alessio. Okay, another article on the coronavirus. Three area counties hit record highs for new daily cases. This is by Deborah Pressey. COVID-19 cases have been heading up in three area counties, with two of them, Ford and Douglas, setting records this week for daily high numbers of new cases. Vermilion County hit its own daily new case high October 6th with 79 new cases, and as of Thursday, had a 7-day rolling average positivity rate of 9.1%. Vermilion County added 59 new cases and an 8th COVID-19 death on Thursday, the county's third coronavirus-related death in a little over a week. Tool said Vermilion has experienced continued spread of the disease among families and from small get-togethers. And I think that's what's frustrating is that we could tie this to some large event. If we could say, well, everyone got it at the same time this weekend, then it'd be manageable. But it's not. It's mainly still family gatherings. Ford County hit its daily record for new cases Tuesday with 26 of the 38 new cases reported that day linked to an outbreak at Piper City Rehab and Living Center. Ford County reported 4 new cases Thursday, bringing its total to date to 230. But that 230 is more than double the total number of cases Ford County had at the end of August. On August 24th, Ford County had 98 cases, said Danielle Walls, who is with the County Health Department. Her health department continues to make itself available to local businesses and keeps repeating warnings to the public about how to best avoid becoming infected. What she'd like to do is remind everyone, this is not over. And even though we've been dealing with this for several months now, we're nowhere near out of it. The Douglas County Health Department reported 27 new cases Wednesday and learned of 13 more by 9 a.m. Thursday. It's going to be another big day, Health Department spokesman Summer Phillips said. Of the 432 confirmed cases in Douglas County, as of Wednesday, the Health Department posted on Facebook, 112 were confirmed in the past 14 days. 2 of the county's 9 deaths also occurred in that 2-week time frame. The Douglas County Health Department launched a new drive-up testing site and flu shot clinic of its own Monday at the Tuscola outlet shops between the Vanity Fair and Old Navy stores. By mid-afternoon Thursday, 250 to 300 people had been tested there for COVID-19. If you go, bring your insurance card if you come to the tested, she advised. Public Health is billing health plans for the tests for people who are insured and covering the cost of the tests for those who aren't. We have no restrictions on the testing. And this is in Douglas County. An upswing in testing has confirmed what health officials already knew, that coronavirus is spreading and that there are a lot of asymptomatic carriers out there. Her health department has seen in several instances people who were declining to wear masks, wash their hands frequently, and maintain social distancing until someone in their own circle became infected. Making it more convenient for people to get tested locally has also helped some people see the light, according to Phillips, and this is still from Douglas County. I can't tell you how many calls I've had from people who said, I just got back my test results back and it's positive, and I thought it was allergies. Miner said one message many people still aren't getting is that quarantine and isolation means staying home and away from other people, not going out for any reason, not having anyone over to their homes, not having little visits at social distances, absolutely no exceptions. I mean, 6.5 feet is not staying away from other people, she said. Also on the front page, we have Saturday's event hopes to make women's voices heard. And this is by Anthony Zillis in Champaign. It was a moment of inspiration for Lisa Bergoon and Susan Kundrat the night Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg died. The two friends wouldn't have called themselves community organizers at that time, but with the death of the women's rights champion on September 18th, they felt moved to act. We were texting each other and saying, you know, I'm not sure that women are getting their voices heard in this election, and what can we do about it? That's literally how we started. Like, well, can we do a rally? Can we do a march? Should we get a group of women together and talk about it? So we decided that we wanted to try a rally and a march. So they made calls to the Champaign and Urbana mayor's office and the police stations to figure out whether holding such an event was possible. That's how the CU Women's Rally and March was born. The event would be held in Westside Park on Saturday at noon with 5 confirmed speakers that will cover topics ranging from immigration and voting rights to Black Lives Matter, climate change, and of course, gender equality. It'll also include a voter registration table. The reality is, we lost someone who really, really worked for women's rights, and we didn't know the replacement. We were like, oh my gosh, this could be terrible for women in the United States. And it doesn't have to be. We can vote now, and we can vote in 2 years, and there are things that are really positive. We want to be really positive about the fact that women can and should use their voices in the election booth. And it can be today, now, or whenever your time in the election booth occurs. It doesn't have to be November 3rd. The event will be held in conjunction with the National Women's March, which will take place in places across the country. While the event is officially affiliated with the national event, Burgoon and Kundrat only realized it existed after they began organizing. We're really trying to have it be local women telling their stories, so it's very organic that way. It's very local to our community. Participants are asked to gather at the Bandshell at Westside Park at noon on Saturday. If more than 50 people attend, Burgoon said, they'll separate groups so that the event stays in accordance with the state's 4 coronavirus guidelines. The event will be open to and inclusive of anyone across the gender spectrum. The focus, though, will be on making women's voices heard. I'm 56 years old, and so I have found as a woman that there's a constant fight for equal pay, there's a constant fight for women's reproductive rights, there's a constant fight for general civil rights as well as LGBTQ rights. I think the biggest concern that we have is that we had somebody in the Supreme Court that moved those issues forward, and I think that women's voices at just a little more than 50% of the population, we need to speak up and we need to make sure to move forward with women's rights, not backwards. Also on the front page of the News Gazette today, there's a picture of the sunflower field that was out by Atkins Group, and it shows there's a block eye in the field. And there is an article that accompanies this called U of I Preparing Course for Possible Summer 2021 Opening. This is by Anthony Zillis. The carving of an eye can still be seen from above the sunflower fields in the Stone Creek neighborhood adjacent to what will soon be likely be called Atkins Golf Club at University of Illinois. Those sunflowers planted by the Atkins Group have now wilted with the arrival of fall, and parts of the golf course have been chopped up in anticipation of a new and improved course set to open next year. From the outside, it looks like we're chewing up the course, said Illinois Assistant Athletic Director for Golf Operations, Jack Szymoniak. But we're chewing it up to have it in better condition moving forward. It's a contradiction to what you would think. In June, the Atkins Group donated the course along with some surrounding land to the university. The U of I's athletic department will own and operate the golf course. When it's finished, which could possibly happen next summer, Szymoniak said it will be longer to make it closer to a championship course at the collegiate level. The bunkers are being redone, the fairways will be narrowed, and the course is being aerated to make it faster and firmer, she said. The trick is making it a course that's challenging and long enough for college players without frustrating everyday golfers. You want it to be fun for everybody, she said. We wouldn't want to build something that's so hard for our team members but not fun at all for the general public to play. A $5 million gift from an anonymous donor last month will go a long way toward realizing that vision, along with the help from a course architect. Luckily, the U of I isn't starting from behind. Overgrown golf courses can take years to return to their normal state. Even in the months after the Atkins Group announced it would no longer be running the former Stone Creek golf course, it maintained the course even though for a time it looked as if it may be turned into a nature reserve. We were fortunate that when the conversations started up with the Atkins group, that they started mowing fairways and brush and the basic applications of fungicides and herbicides. If there were no maintenance whatsoever, we would have had a mess on our hands. But luckily, we were able to keep that intact, and we were able to set ourselves up to be in a good position to start. As for whether a field of sunflowers will line one of the fairways on the course in the years going forward, Simosniak wasn't sure. Even if it was just for a year, the popular sunflowers served an important purpose. What a cool thing, Simosniak said, to have people coming into the community and soaking up a little bit of joy amidst so much gloom. And we also have Ask the Admin, a daily question for the Champaign's Urbana Public Health District's Julie Pride. The question, somebody posed a situation. Out-of-state family members being treated for COVID-19, no underlying health conditions, and had been hospitalized since August 27th on a ventilator over 30 days, and is now in rehab, and was presumed to have COVID-19, but has now tested negative a total of 6 times in both outpatient and inpatient settings. How can this be, and how can we trust testing? And the answer, this is a clinical question best answered by the attending physician in consultation with the infectious disease consultant. One of several possible explanations from a public health perspective includes: the individual may have been exposed for a while and developed complications later. When tested, the PCR is not picking up any live virus. This scenario is unusual, but not unlikely. An antibody test can be done to know if there was a previous exposure to COVID-19. In addition to a PCR test, providers also look at signs, symptoms, complications, and diagnostic radiology, which means a chest CT scan, etc., to make a different diagnosis and treatment plan. We have Top of the Morning by Bob Asmussen. And during almost 25 years as photo editor at the News Gazette, Daryl Holman didn't get actively involved with civic organizations. When you're at the paper, you can't really join anything, Holman said. After retiring from the News Gazette in 2013, Holman was introduced to the Champaign-Urbana Sunrise Rotary Club by friend Scott Paisley. He became a member in 2015 and served as president last year. Because of his fine work with the organization, Holman was named 2019-2020 Rotarian of the Year for Rotary District 6490. The Rotarian of the Year award goes to one Rotary member in the district who exemplifies the mission of Rotary. We've got some amazing people at our club, Holman said. As president of CU Sunrise Rotary, Holman created Leap into Karaoke that won the district award for outstanding club services. The event was held in February and raised more than $1,000 for the CU Schools Foundation, earmarked for performing arts and programs. The club's Food as Medicine program helps supply food to families in need of additional nutrition. Before COVID-19, the club held its meetings at Champaign's Logic. During the pandemic, CU Sunrise has held weekly meetings on Zoom. On October 1st, the club had an outdoor meeting at Hessel Park. Rotarians tend to be very social, Holman said. We needed to kind of see each other once in a while. Holman, 68, has been married to Catherine Bibka for 38 years. He is owner of Daryl Holman Photography. And going into the second part of the News Gazette, that's called Our County. And the headlines are Church Throwing Pumpkin Party for Good Cause. And this is by Dave Hinton. And it's out of Savoy. A sow and her 3 piglets will be there. So will a character from Disney's Frozen and a mother cat and her babies. They are among the pumpkin creations that will be on hand Saturday afternoon in the Savoy United Methodist Church parking lot. The Pumpkin Patch drive-through is all for a good cause, to raise funds to help feed the needy. Trolls and snowmen are among some of the other creations for the event set for 2 to 5 p.m., organizer Nicole Hagerly said. Hagerly and her three young daughters created the sow and piglet pumpkins. The big pumpkin is a real porker. Hagel guessed it was about 40 pounds. A church member church donated 60 pumpkins to the cause. As of Wednesday, 30 had been decorated and returned. The drive-through will also include scarecrows. The pumpkins will have a long life, though, as they won't be set outside for squirrel food. The church has big plans for them. Some will be available for purchase. Those that don't go on sale will go on tour. No, it's not a band trip. They will be in showing up unannounced in people's yards and will be moved every day between 4 and 8 p.m. People can buy insurance to keep pumpkins off their lawn. You can register your own home or someone else's home, or you buy the insurance. After that, they will be brought back to the church for the youth group Pumpkin Olympics. We think that's going to be part of the fun to see what shape they'll come back in. At the drive-through, donations will be accepted that will go toward 170 Thanksgiving food boxes to be given away to families in the community. Hedgley said the church is hoping to raise $8,000 toward the food giveaway from church contributions and donations. The church is located at 3002 West Old Church Road. Also on the front page of our county, it's Woman's Dream, capital D, capital R, capital E, capital A, M, Coming True, and this is by Jody Heckel. Lena Mangua took the distressing events of this year and addressed them in a positive way through running. The Champaign resident ran 401 miles in 100 days to raise money for DREAM, which means is acronym for Driven to Reach Excellence and Academic Achievement for Males, which is a local nonprofit organization that supports the achievements of African-American boys and young men. She began running in mid-June and finished the 401 miles in late September. Mangua will run a half marathon Saturday to finish her effort to raise awareness and seek donations for the organization. She was inspired to do the run by the events she was hearing and seeing this summer. The disproportionate effect of COVID-19 on minorities, the violence against black men, and the racial justice protests. I don't have to do something. I just have to do something. I can't keep reading and seeing all this bad stuff and not doing anything about it, Mangua said. At the same time, fitness is important to her. She runs, swims, and plays tennis, and she has run several half marathons and a marathon. She felt it was particularly important to pay attention to her health now. With COVID and the risk and the fact that it's affecting African American and minority populations, and we have a lot of pre-existing conditions in the African American community, I wanted to do my part to be healthy. She also wanted a goal to keep her motivated to exercise. She heard a speaker at George Floyd's funeral mention that it has been 401 years since the first African slave arrived here, and she wondered if she could run 401 miles. She chose to run the miles over a period of 100 days. She ran most days, usually covering 4 miles, but sometimes running up to 10. While running, Mangua often listened to audiobooks to help her learn about the history of racism in the U.S. Not having grown up in this country, I grew up in Cameroon, West Africa. I didn't see any of this tension. I really wanted to understand. Her husband, Mabu, sometimes ran with her, and one day they ran a half marathon together, his first. Mangua tried to set a good example for her three daughters. They also will run this weekend. They'll be 15-year-old Xenia and 13-year-old Gabby will run a 10K, and 9-year-old Alexis will run a 5K. I set out to help myself and the organization, but I can see the ways it has helped my family. In Africa, the expression, "it takes a village," is put into practice, she said. I am one of six children, and my parents always taught us that when the older children finish school, they help the parents support the younger ones to make sure they go through college too. That's what we did in my family, she said, adding that communities and churches support students who are away at college, and those young people come back and do the same for others. I feel this is an extension of that. I'm making sure my girls see that just because we're able to go to school doesn't mean everybody is able to. How are we giving back to help others? Several friends will be running with her this weekend for at least part of the distance. Mangua has raised $3,000 so far in donations for the Dream organization, which with commitment for more. What this has taught me is that sometimes we make a goal and it seems so impossible, but you go out and take it a day at a time, a step at a time, and you can get it done and see how much we as humans can stretch ourselves to do even more, Mangua said. Another article on the front page of our county is no charges for driver, comma, protesters. And this is by Ben Zigderman. After a police investigation, Champaign County State's Attorney Julia Reitz has declined to file charges against the man who drove his pickup truck through a small protest July 25th in front of a since-closed barbershop in downtown Champaign. She also declined to file charges against protesters for alleged vandalism and threats made to the rogue barbershop and its owner, Michael Long. Protesters complained that the truck driver endangered them by driving from the scene. Evidence shows that the driver was driving slowly away from the scene, that one of the protesters put his bike in the way of the truck, and others converged on the truck, pounded on the truck, and attempted to get it to stop rather than moving away from the truck, Reitz wrote October 12th to Champaign Police. The city of Champaign also won't be pursuing any ordinance violations, officials said. Protesters were critical of the decision, with Justin Hendricks saying, "When reading, I asked myself, who did she interview? None of the organizers nor protesters were interviewed." Rogue Barber Company at 12 East Washington Street closed in August after it became a site of regular protests this summer. And this is the end of the first half of reading the News Gazette on Friday, October 16th. I will be back to read the second half, so take a little break now.